Coming up, correspondent Dan Lothian on why some young Europeans and Americans are trying to join ISIS and other violent extremist groups. And Lucky Severson reports on the growing number of benefit corporations, B Corps. They're for-profit companies with social goals they say are just as important as maximizing profit.
You just thank the Lord.
Plus, the Blind Boys of Alabama, singing gospel music for 70 years.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome. I'm Kim Lawton, sitting in for Bob Abernethy. Thank you for joining us. Religious groups, and especially Jewish groups, were divided this week over Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's controversial speech before the U.S. Congress. Some praised his tough stance against Iran and ISIS, as well as his assertion that Jews would not be passive in the face of possible genocide. But others accused Netanyahu of interfering in American partisan politics for his own political gain. Many raised concerns about the impact of his visit on U.S.-Israeli relations. Prayers continued around the world on behalf of hundreds of Assyrian Christians who were kidnapped by ISIS militants last week. A human rights group said 19 of the hostages were released, apparently after being processed by an ISIS Sharia court. At the Vatican, Pope Francis led special prayers for the remaining hostages and condemned the brutality of ISIS. Here in the U.S., leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention called on President Obama to do more to stop ISIS. They said ISIS is the greatest threat to world peace since the Nazis. They also cited the Bible, urging the president to protect the least of these. Last week, we ran my report on what U.S. Muslims are doing to try to prevent violent extremism from taking hold in this country. Today, a report from Dan Lothian on why some people, men and women, all over the world are trying to help ISIS and other extremist groups.
Hanif Kadir knows firsthand how easily radicals can claim young hearts and minds. 12 years ago, he traveled from Britain to Afghanistan to help women and children caught up in war, but was reeled in by the Taliban.
I wanted to do something positive, but by getting involved with them, I was slowly drawn into radical thinking, radical views, and then slowly being sucked into looking at other options of doing positive work. And that even meant violence.
The depth of that violence is on display across the internet. Extremist groups like ISIS spew disturbing rhetoric and proudly carry out beheadings. It's often done in the name of religion.
So people have tended to focus very much on, okay, this has to do with Islam, but it is ultimately an Islam that is interpreted by criminals.
However the Quran is interpreted, radicals are finding new recruits in the U.S. and around the world, and social media is expanding their reach. Professor Ali Asani, who heads Harvard's Islamic Studies Department, says the appeal may defy logic, but to the right audience, it makes sense.
It's very easy for people who are marginalized to instrumentalize religious ideas, because very often religious traditions do talk about good versus evil, right? But it's just a question of who you define as good and who you define as evil.
Some argue many of these young recruits lack a deep understanding of Islam, religious illiterates who are searching for a cause greater than themselves.
They really don't have the ballast to be able to say, no, I don't think that's what Surat At-Tawbah says. They don't really have the knowledge base to be able to fend off that kind of manipulation of the religion that these groups are doing, to convince them that this is the way that they can be the best Muslims they can be.
But some of the foreign recruits join the fight in Syria and Iraq with their eyes wide open, true believers in radical Islam. Professor Asani says they're also lured by money, housing, wives, and a sense of belonging.
You come and fight with us, and your visions, your ideas, you're going to be valued, you're going to be at the center of power.
And it's not just young men. Three teenage girls from Denver, Colorado, were detained in Germany after apparently trying to join Islamic militants in Syria. It's reported dozens of French girls have also run away from home to sign up with ISIS. Mia Bloom, professor of security studies at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, has been investigating the recruiting of Western girls.
At some level, there may be this utopian ideal of being a Muslim, living in a Muslim society. But I think for the most part, what they're saying to the girls is, everything is going to be taken care of for you.
So it's sort of a two-pronged appeal to these young girls. It's one of religion, but it's also one of, we can give you things, right?
We'll pay your expenses. Once you get here, we're going to arrange your marriage. You know, in the afterlife, sitting by Muhammad, you'll be a hero to your community.
Few of the young women end up on the front lines. They typically cook, clean, and take care of kids. They support the violent radicals behind the beheadings of Americans and many others.
Aren't these young girls frightened by the videos that we see out there, the violence? Does that not turn them off?
They may think either that it's propaganda and they don't believe it, or they may actually be attracted to the fact that these groups are powerful and they're able to stand up to the United States and to Britain.
A new report by Richard Barrett, who led the UN's Al-Qaeda and Taliban monitoring teams, says through electronic media, ISIS pays considerable attention to its image and tries to balance pictures of horror intended to demoralize its enemies with a softer image to encourage its friends. As the U.S. carries out airstrikes in hopes of defeating ISIS, Barrett's report claims that about 15,000 foreigners have joined the Islamic State since 2011.
Let's work as partners, you know, to combat those peoples.
Because Imam Talal Eid with the Islamic Institute of Boston warns against this radical ideology, even when he's speaking to educated students in quiet suburbs.
After the sermon, the students will come to me and say, why you are telling us this? We know it. Are you afraid of us? None of us here is having this kind of mentality, and you keep reminding us. I said, I tell them, I feel that I have to say these things.
But with about 3 million Muslims in America, Imam Eid wants the public to have some perspective.
I will not tell you that this movement is not serious. It's dangerous because they kill people. It's not that much difficult to get one out of 10,000 people. That's what they are getting.
We have brothers from Bangladesh, from Iraq, from Cambodia, Australia, UK.
Professor Bloom wants to shed more light on tactics being used to recruit those young people, not only in this country, but overseas. She's co-writing a book titled Small Arms, Children and Terrorism.
To figure out, are there ways that we can interrupt the process to prevent children from being involved?
And Active Change Foundation, a British organization, is denouncing the violent actions of ISIS as it works to keep more young men and women from becoming radicalized. The man behind this group, Hanif Kadir, who described earlier how he was sucked in by radicals in Afghanistan.
I was lucky to come back. I was lucky to survive, really.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Dan Lothian in Boston.
In other news, some religious groups have launched a campaign in support of Kelly Gissendanner, Georgia's only female death row inmate. Her scheduled execution this week was indefinitely postponed because of concerns about the lethal injection drug. The 46-year-old prisoner was sentenced to death for her role in the 1997 murder of her husband. Many faith leaders have urged that her death sentence be overturned. Gissendanner became a devout Christian and earned a theology degree while behind bars. She's become a spiritual mentor to other prisoners. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in a case challenging tax credit subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. Many faith-based activists rallied in front of the court, urging the justices to uphold the existing law. The Interfaith Coalition said eliminating the subsidies would unjustly hurt poor and vulnerable people. We have a story now from Lucky Severson about the growing number of so-called benefit corporations, or B Corps. They are for-profit companies that think their service to their workers and their communities is as valuable as maximizing profit. And they insist that in the long run, those twin missions are good for their shareholders.
This is a company called United by Blue. For every product they sell, they promise to remove a pound of trash from oceans and waterways. And they don't just send a check. They host cleanups across the country. It's one of over 1,000 businesses in the U.S. now designated as a benefit corporation, or B Corp.
They're doing it because they are guided by a sense of whether they call them values or ethics or spirituality or religion, whatever it might be, that's their center of gravity that says even when no one's looking and even if nobody else cares, I care, and this is how I want to behave.
J. Cone Gilbert is one of three Stanford University schoolmates who did extremely well in business and then co-founded the B Corp movement. In 2006, they started a nonprofit organization called B Lab, dedicated to using the power of for-profit businesses to solve social and environmental problems. An increasing number of states have approved new legislation promoted by B-Lab, making it easier for companies to commit to higher standards of purpose and accountability.
The idea is to change the conversation from you and I supporting just a good product to you and I supporting a good company.
Bart Houlihan and Andrew Kasoy are B Corp co-founders.
Lots of this can feel really good, and you can have lots of people who want to live in a different economy, but the rules of the old economy are an impediment often. We have to do things like change laws so that it's clear that investors can choose to invest in these kinds of businesses and create long-term value without being worried about getting sued by a short-term investor who wants them to think about nothing other than how much money they make this quarter.
Through a stringent set of standards, B-Lab also measures a company's real impact on its workers, the community, and the environment. In other words, they certify that the company is doing the good it promises to do.
Have you had any corporations that have lost their certification?
You bet. We're a pretty pragmatic culture here in the U.S. We pretty much want to see performance, not just a good mission statement on the wall. And that's where things like a B Corp certification matter, because it shows that folks are actually walking their talk.
The King Arthur Flour Company is the oldest flour company in America, over 200 years old, employee-owned, and a B Corp. Their campus in Norwich, Vermont, includes a warehouse and an on-site bakery. Suzanne McDowell is a co-CEO and vice president of human resources.
It's an opportunity for us to not just think about the bottom line, which, you know, is important, but there are other things that are as important: the environment, the, you know, our society, our community, all of our shareholders, all of our stakeholders, not just the bottom line.
King Arthur pays its employees well, offers health insurance for part-timers, and gives its workers a week off each year to do community service. Jay Rimmel, a production manager, says it's caused employees to think more about giving.
There's a local haven, homeless shelter. We've volunteered there. There's a food shelf locally that a lot of us have volunteered for. So we have some people that do reading for school kids. I think it's trickled down and actually pulled some people into doing volunteer that they wouldn't normally have thought of.
Martin Phillip is in charge of the bakery. A self-titled breadhead, he came to King Arthur from the world of investment banking. Now he's proud to work for a company that cares about more than the bottom line.
It means that we're looking at who we are within a community.
Yeah.
It means that we're looking at who we are within the environment. So how are we taking care of our environment? What are the resources that we're using? How could we do better?
You know, we want to increase our assessment on the environmental side. And so we decided to put in these electric vehicle charging stations, which we are one of 70 in the state of Vermont.
There are critics of the B Corp model. A common concern is that the very existence of B Corp implies that there is something missing or lacking in conventional companies.
We hear that all the time, and we're not here to stand against anything. We're here to stand for something. It's not about tearing anybody down. It's about highlighting the leaders and showing people that there's a better way to do business, and then everybody else can follow.
Kenneth Goodpaster is a professor of business ethics emeritus at the University of St. Thomas. He helped draft a groundbreaking Vatican document released in 2012 entitled The Vocation of the Business Leader. It says business leadership is a noble calling and an opportunity to practice Catholic social teaching, which underscores human dignity and the common good.
Good goods, good work, and good wealth are the three pillars of this vocation of the business leader, and all three of those principles are to be found in the business corp idea.
But Professor Goodpaster says there are still lurking problems with the B Corp seal of approval.
Unscrupulous managers who would, in the name of doing good, abuse the capital that was given to them and make excuses because we didn't get a good return this year because we were busy doing what we had to do in the social sense, when in fact it was mismanagement that led to the poor returns in that year. And there need to be safeguards for the shareholders.
Corporate law generally favors the shareholders who invest to make a profit. Bart Houlihan learned that firsthand before he co-founded B Corp when he sold his $250 million basketball footwear and apparel company.
The moment when we sold the company, by law, the only thing that we could consider at that time was maximizing shareholder value. And it felt to me at the back end of that that there had to be a better way.
One of the more famous examples of a company's fiduciary obligations to the shareholders occurred in the year 2000 when Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, the famous do-gooder company, was suddenly purchased by a European conglomerate. The founders were accused of selling out, but their lawyer said if they didn't sell, because the offer was above market price, they could be sued by the shareholders. With a B Corp designation, that would be far less likely to happen.
Welcome to Ben & Jerry's. I'm going to be your tour guide today, so I'll take you on the three-part tour of our factory, where you'll see a quick video about how the company got started.
As it turned out, Ben & Jerry's was allowed by its new owner to continue its social mission and is now a certified money-making B Corp. It's that bottom line that causes some to question the real value of B Corporations. Can they compete at the bottom line?
We know that B Corps have gone out of business at a lower rate than companies like them in the rest of the economy.
Not only did they survive, and not only were they creating jobs, over 53% of B Corps during that period actually had 5% job growth during the same five-year period where private industry in the U.S. shed 7 million jobs.
There have been over 40 studies done about B corporations like King Arthur Flour, comparing them to conventional companies.
All of whom have concluded that stronger environmental, social, and governance performance leads to long-term value creation for shareholders. Period. Full stop.
The timing may be ripe for companies pushing for more than just financial profit.
There's some interesting data that's come out recently about millennials, who now represent, I believe, over 50% of the workforce, and that they're looking for something more than just money in their work.
Students of today, at least the ones we see in our classrooms, want that larger meaning. It's not that they're totally selfless or that they're only altruists, but sure, they want jobs and they want to have a families and communities and resources, but that's not enough for them these days. And I don't know if it ever was enough, but at least they're more explicit these days about how important that is to them.
As they sail away on Lake Champlain for their annual retreat, B Corp CEOs feel they're getting the wind at their back. B Lab now certifies companies in 34 countries, and over half the states have approved the benefit corporation legislation. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Burlington, Vermont.
The legendary New Orleans Jazz Festival next month will showcase some of the top musical acts in the country. Among them, a gospel group that has been performing for more than 70 years, the Blind Boys of Alabama. We caught up with them for more on their music and their ministry.
Sit back
relax, and listen to the Blind Boy. The Blind Boy started out in a little town in Alabama called Talladega. The group started out June the 10th, 1944.
All you need is faith to hear the Jesus humming. You don't need no ticket.
You just thank the Lord.
I was born without sight, and I used to question God. I was the baby of six boys, and I was the only one that was blind. I was the only one that could sing. And so music means a lot to me.
The Blind Boys is a group that's not blind. They just can't see. And that means they might have lost their sight, but they never lost their direction.
We feel that we were called by God to do this work.
When God shut Noah in the grand old ark, he put a rainbow in the cloud.
No matter what the situation is, I found a way. God will find a way. Like the Bible says, if you trust in the Lord, he'll make a way. And that's what he done for the Blind Boys.
Night seems to fall.
Gospel is the good news of God, you know. So we tell the world about God.
We will work with young artists and the young artists who work with us.
There have been times that we had to change some of the lyrics and make it into a gospel song that we feel comfortable with. It becomes a Blind Boy gospel song.
There will never be any peace until God is at the conference table.
There will never be any peace
until God
is seated at the conference table.
There will never
we heard the words, and then it was meaning so much because of what was going on today. So we heard it, and we put it down, and it sounds so good, and it felt better than it sounded. So we said we're going to keep it. So now we sing that one every night. And it means so much to all of us.
We've been around a long time. And God has kept us. He has provided for us. And we've had some of our people to pass away. He always sends other people to fill in. So that means that, you know, we are doing something that's pleasing to him.
Cardinal Edward Egan, the former Roman Catholic Archbishop of New York, died of cardiac arrest this week at the age of 82. Egan led the archdiocese for 9 tumultuous years that included the 9/11 attacks, the clergy sex abuse scandal, and growing financial difficulties. He retired in 2009. On our calendar, starting next fall, New York City's 1.1 million public school students will have 2 more days off, the Muslim holy days of Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha. Mayor Bill de Blasio announced the change, noting that schools already recognize several Christian and Jewish holidays. New York will be the largest school system in the country to grant the Islamic holidays. More than 10% of the students there are Muslim. Finally, this weekend marks the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, when civil rights activists in Selma, Alabama, were violently attacked by state troopers. After Bloody Sunday, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. organized interfaith support for a series of marches that led to passage of the Voting Rights Act. Many religious leaders are in Alabama this weekend to commemorate those events. On our website, I have a special story about the role of religion and the continuing legacy of the voting rights movement. I hope you'll check it out. That's our program for now. I'm Kim Lawton. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and I'd love to connect with you there as well at Kim Lawton on Religion and Ethics News Weekly. Watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's always much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more from the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Just for a day. I'll find a way to carry it all, to carry it all.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.